AW Masters, reel 17.
I said, no, I don't want your wife or anybody else's wife reporting on me. Understand? And what could he say? So this gunner said, well, all right. He said, well, you carry on with supper, he said, and you catch the 11:30 tram back from Chatham Town Hall then, in those days, back to the barracks, you see. So I was quite bucked about this. Next time I went ashore, I happened to run into this chief. He was off duty, you see. So I said, you didn't do me a very good turn. I said, you didn't try to do me one either, did you? I said, we won't argue about it. I said, if you've got any further thing to say, let me know. I said, and I'll put it in the proper hands. Oh, he said, you're one of them. I said, what do you mean? Oh, he said, you do your own regulations. I said, and so should you. So should you. I said, you shouldn't have your wife out spying, should you? Well, I mean, he had no answer. The job was done. But, I mean, it's just one of those little things that happen, you know. It showed the other side of the strictness of life.
Can I just finish with two things that we haven't we touched before, and just to tie it up today and to close it. One was canteen messing, and messing in the Navy, eating generally in the Navy, which we talked about, and you told me how the you were issued with certain personal stores. You got meat, potatoes, I think it was. How was feeding organised, in fact, in the Navy? How was the canteen system organised?
Well, it depends. On board ship. It depends, again, what type of ship you was in, you see. We'll say roughly, it boiled down to this, that you had certain provisions you could get from the paymaster. Other provisions you had to depend on the canteen to supply. The canteens were usually run in those days by civilians, either a civilian firm or possibly in the Mediterranean you'd have Maltese canteen managers. The officers, servants and stewards would be Maltese. In other words, it depended upon them to supply the extras over and above what the paymaster allowed. And the paymaster's allowance, plus what you could get from the canteen, would be drawn by individual messes. And the leading hand of the mess would be responsible for that being dealt with, cooked by the galley, or whatever they would desire to be done in the mess. And then the cooks of the mess, ratings from the mess, would be responsible for getting the cooked stuff from the galley or the other materials from the canteen and provide it to the mess for the meal times. You see, it all sounds crude, but it's one of those cases where experience teaches, you see, and everybody lived. Well, I didn't starve, and nobody else did, to my knowledge. But as I say, there, it was not haphazard, but you had to deal with what you could get locally. You see, if you was under the conditions of being, we'll say, in the Mediterranean, if you was away from a reasonable-sized town, the canteen manager wouldn't be able to lay in stocks of fresh stuff as often as you'd like. Well, now, that system of messing used to go on. Now, dating from 1903, when the Dreadnought was built, that was when General Messing was first introduced into the Navy, because she was looked upon as being something absolutely out of the blue, which she was in her day, and the General Messing there was found to be of a far more substantial thing over which people had control. It was introduced into the bigger ships. The Warspite class, I think, were the Benbows, possibly. It was the battleships who first introduced it in the Navy. And it gradually came through the various cruisers. And today, I believe, they got some fancy cafeteria swindle. But anyway, during my time, it was the case that the general messing was done, we'll say, in a battleship. The pay commander would be responsible, with his own staff, of course, but he was the head of the tree, and all provisions came through the paymaster. And if you wanted anything extra, you could always buy it and pay for it out of your own mess fund. But by and large, the diets were so arranged that, well, you always had plenty of cooked meals, you had fresh fish and always bred. Of course, there again was another asset, you see, the early ships didn't have bakehouses. Well, as they came along, especially through the First War, so the bakeries were put in, and even small cruisers had their own bakeries, which of course in itself was an asset. And you didn't realise that until you was in a sloop or something where they had no bakehouse, no beef screen, no nothing. And you was on hardtack.
You could be on hardtack there.
Well, we was on hardtack for about over 3 months in that sloop that where we went from Jib to Australia.
Mm-hmm. How did the mess fund work? What was the arrangement?
Well, the idea was, you see, everybody was allowed a sum. I forget what it was, but we'll just say in round figures it was 1/8 a day per man. Now, if you've got 10 men at 1/8 a day, well, it doesn't want a lot of working out what you're going to have at the end of a 30-day month, say. Now, we'll say in round figures that whatever your commitments with the canteen were, if you'd gone over and above, you paid that out of your mess fund. If the paymaster, if you was in debt to the paymaster at all, you'd simply get a chit along and say, your mess owes, we'll say, £3.05. All right? If there was not sufficient money having come from the mess, the caterer of the mess would say, well, now, my commitments are, we'll say, £7, and I got five, 10 of you, £2. Mm-hmm. You see? So the mess would be responsible for reimbursing the caterer to whatever extent the bill's required. Well, of course, in general messing, largely, that didn't occur anymore.
Yeah. So how much would a man expect to pay, apart from the fact that it varied different parts of the world? I mean, you'd have to pay how much a month?
Well, it would just depend where you were. And, of course, it would depend, again, on the size of the ship. But if you can say, well, we put it in round figures and say, if he was going to pay 10 bob a month a man, that would be about average. Yeah. If you'd been kicking over the ice spots and said, well, we want 30 bob, would have been very lucky to get it, because, I mean, the rate of pay you come to consider in those days, AB's pay was £2.04 a month, you see? Mm-hmm. So you didn't kick the stars at all.
Right. Were you leading hand in the mess at one time?
Oh, Lord, yes, you went right through the gamut.
Yes, you must have gone through it at some time. What sort of pressures are there on you to make a little go a long way, or to try and organise it so that everybody gets something decent? Well, how do you kind of work it out? What's your position?
Well, there again, you learn by experience. And, if you've got any sort of sense of responsibility about these things, you would know, first of all, what you're going to draw. You would work out how much money you'd likely to get in, and divide that, we'll say, by 30. How much per day can I spend? You see, it's just like a housewife.
Sure.
That's all it boils down to.
And it was your job to assign the cooks so that, you know,
it was. You simply say, right, you two. And of course, they work in rotations, so they haven't been told once, everybody knew. There was no argument about it.
And it wasn't an onerous task to be cook. I mean, everybody...
Not at all. Everybody had to do it. Everybody.
Yeah. And did they have to be arrange a bit of time off between, you know, the end of one session before the morning, basically before lunch? Did you let them away 10 minutes early or something like that?
Yes. Whatever they would do. Well, you see, in a properly run ship, there would be a bugle. Cooks of the galley. And that exonerated a man from any work he may be doing then, if he was cook or mess. You see, he'd get away for that period, so that by dinner time, everything would be ready, cut and dried. And of course, there again, you see, discipline comes in again, because nobody thought of, the bugle's gone, I'm going. Oh no. If they weren't cook or mess, they didn't go. You see, it's that sense of discipline, as I said, that kept the whole thing on absolutely level terms.
And they would wash up after meals,
put
away.
Yes,
and
yes.
They'd be cooked for the whole day, or maybe for a week.
Maybe for a week. Of course, the circumstances or the case, it depends what you were doing. Depends whether you was at sea for any length of time, because you've got to make arrangements then for people being on watch or off watch. And as I say, while it sounds as though it's a lot, it's like everything else in life. Once you're used to it, once you've done it yourself, well, it's a Bobby's job.
What about the meals themselves? I mean, the actual breakfast. Would it be cooked breakfast?
Oh, we always. Yeah. Well, there again, it's the onus of the caterer in the canteen messing, you see, to have what the mess requires. I mean, you wouldn't say offhand, right, I want this, therefore it's going to be done. No. If you've got 12 men in the mess, you should make it known, well, what's your preference? Anybody doesn't like so-and-so? Okay. And then, of course, in the old days of canteen messing, such things as sweets, puddings and that sort of thing, they were, you could always buy the fruit, flour, fat and whatever you required, sugar, tea, from the paymaster, posset stores, see, which was at a greatly reduced price to anything you might want from the canteen. Therefore, the sensible caterer dealt with the paymaster to the preference of the canteen.
Yes.
And if the people themselves wanted any extras, such as cheese or fresh vegetables or fruit, well, there it was, canteen, go and buy it. You see, that was a cash sale.
So by and large, men ate reasonably well, in fact. Very well sometimes.
Very well.
Ate, yes.
Oh, Lord, yes.
It was cooked breakfasts, cooked lunches. And
usually a cooked tea.
Usually a cooked tea as well.
Well, if you didn't have a cooked tea, I mean, you would always make provision for something in the way of whatever was in season, such as, we'll say, celery and salads or whatever. And of course, it was a case of, there again, you see, we're up against the very same thing every time as experienced teachers. Now, you take places in the Mediterranean, for instance, where you could go and buy, in those days, you could buy about £5 of tomatoes for a penny. But were they worth it? Because largely, you see, you take around the Greek islands, where the conditions are not too sanitary at all, there was quite a lot of dysentery. And Jaffa, anywhere in the eastern Mediterranean especially, or in North Africa as far as that goes, so that it was up to the caterer of the mess, if you was dealing with that sort of stuff, to see that proper precautions were taken to have nothing that wasn't washed or peeled. You see, in other words, it was just use your loaf as you go.
And can I just ask you briefly, breakfast could be bacon and eggs or porridge?
Bacon, tomatoes, porridge if it was wanted, sausages, kippers, whatever people had a preference for.
Yeah, and I think we'll leave it there. The other thing I was curious to know about, again, was the rum issue. This, again, was quite strictly observed and strictly carried out.
Definitely.
Tell me about the arrangements.
Well, you see, the rum was kept always in a store, and in a big ship it was kept under the hatchway, given access to the rum store, was under a sentry's on the aft deck, the aft deck being the area in which the officers lived, and below that area would be the rum store. I mean, this is an extreme case, of vastly different, of course, to a destroyer, but anyway, leaving it at that for a moment, at 11 o'clock, the duty officer of the day would be approached by the duty petty officer of the day, and the necessary victualling staff, who would proceed along to the room to get the key of the spirit room from the sentry who's on duty. And that would be unlocked under the supervision of the officer of the day, and the rum itself would be in the kegs down below, and the cooper carried in all big ships in those days with the necessary victualling staff, plus possibly the officer of the day, always with the petty officer of the day in any case, would then go down the hatch for that rum to be pumped out of the keg into the necessary container, and passed up in the big gallon measures up to the top, and it was dealt with on the aft deck. And the victualling staff would have with them the requisite information about how much rum was required, and they would pool all the information for all the messes. Of course, if in the shipping commission it was known from day to day, and we'll say in round figures that they wanted 3.5 gallon of rum. All right, up come 3.5 gallon of rum, and put into the breaker, you see. And from the breaker, of course, it would be then escorted up to the rum tub. Now, at the rum tub, wait a minute, before you get as far as that, the chief and petty officers would have an issue of neat rum from the spirit room, you see. And the caterer of the mess, or designated by the president of the mess, would be responsible for that rum to be taken from that breaker to the mess, turned over to who's ever responsible in the mess, where it would be dealt out to the requisite men who were so entitled, or in the case of a chief or petty officer mess, it was simply left there, and people took their own, and that was that. Now, in the case of the bulk of the rum for the ship's company, that would be taken to the baker, to the breaker, and then from there to the tub. Now, the amount of rum that was put in had to be checked and double-checked, and in those days it was mixed with water, three to one sort of thing. Well, anyway, but when the proper mixture was made, the water was first put in to the rum tub, and then the rum was again measured, tot for tot, pint for pint, out of the breaker into the tub. Now, if there was a large number of men away from the ship on duty, or anything that would necessitate their not being on hand for the rum to be issued at that day, that rum would be taken out of the breaker and put to one side, and of course all notations made, and the remainder would then be mixed up. And then the caterers or the leading hands of messes, whoever was responsible, would appear and just simply quote the number of their mess. The victualling staff would say 3.5 pints or whatever the quantity was, which would be meticulously measured and taken in a receptacle away. Well, then that became their onus to take it to their respective messes.